Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 11th of November, recording at the 9:52 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but let's have a quick review of the week. First, in stock markets, we had 2 days up at the beginning of the week, then on Wednesday, markets were smashed in Europe. That led to a weak Thursday in Asia. Wall Street and Europe clawed back some of the decline, maybe a quarter to a third of the decline on Thursday, and a good deal more today with a strong performance. Asian stock markets were mistrustful, mostly quietly mixed here today, but solid gains in Europe, a number of them over 3%. The UK, which is outside of the euro, up 1.85%. German DAX index up 3.22%. And in the Americas, we had gains really on the order of 2% pretty much across the boards. Canada came in a little less strong than that, but a solid performance here today. Against this background, well, over the week we've seen long-dated government bond prices range very sharply as well, or range in a volatile fashion as well, but in the opposite direction of what stock markets were doing. And they are currently a little bit easier. Well, they were a little bit easier in here today. Now, precious metals. We had a shakeout in gold, not least yesterday, but it rebounded strongly today to close up $30 at $17.88.30. Similar action in the other precious metals. Some softening followed by, some softening from Wednesday onwards, followed by some pretty good gains in here today. It takes silver, for instance, up to $34.69.5. And the U.S. dollar, well, that's lurched as well. Had a big day on the upside on Wednesday, as the stock markets in Europe and Asia collapsed, but it's retraced most of that subsequently. And the euro is pushed back up to 137.47, which is interesting. And sterling back over 160.79. Industrial metals mostly a bit firmer on the week, including today. The exception was nickel, which was down a tiny bit. Grains and beans weaker in here. Crude oil strong, 114 on the Brent and $99.30 on the WTI. Okay, so what's going on here? Well, this movable feast, slightly inappropriate description, but I used to describe activities in Europe, has really focused on Italy this week. And the market liked the news that Berlusconi would be resigning, and that there would be some sort of emergency government, and they were going to come up with something to something concrete to deliver in terms of their necessary budget cuts. Now, then bond yields soared. There was a little technicality, I gather, on on Wednesday, I mentioned that yesterday, I think in the audio, and that was that one of the clearing houses had doubled their deposit requirements on Italian bonds. But at any rate, yields soared upwards. I think the 10-year yields got up to 7.75, and they'd been hovering around the $6 level earlier in 6% level earlier in the week. And yields also inverted with the 2 and the 5 years actually going higher. Well, they came back down. That was climactic. I described it and posted that chart and said that was climactic activity. And they fell back very sharply on Thursday, and they saw downside follow through in here today. So those yields are now back down, I think, below the 6.5 level. And so that's good news, although I think we really need to see it back down below 6. Now, will that actually happen? Well, you can never be sure here about European politicians, but one obviously hopes so. The answer is maybe. First, we had Italy's upper house pass the budget package and in a vote today, and that will be voted on, I think, early next week, Monday or Tuesday, by the lower house. And then they have to get it past the unions and the population in general. And my best Italian contacts say that's exactly what's going to happen, that everybody, including the unions, knows how serious the situation is, and that they will do it. You net all this out, and what's important here, really important, is not that the crisis be solved at this time, because it can't be. We know that. We know it's going to take years to deleverage, get Europe back onto some sort of decent growth footing. And therefore, what's really important at this stage is for investors and not least Europeans to become convinced that they're actually moving in the right direction. Now, the answer to that would vary considerably depending on who you spoke to. I'm most concerned in terms of contagion and overall influence because, frankly, I got tired of being asked so many times about Greece, not so much by subscribers because they talked about it almost every day, but people I would meet. And then tired of being asked about Italy. The endless thing, is the euro going to break up? And interesting, just as those Italian bonds have started to come off, we seem to have almost a consensus coming out of the United States. It's based on, it's a very unofficial sampling based on just the reports and comments that I see on the financial channels, that the euro is going to break up. Well, no. I would say that's really not the case at all. And as I say, what concerns me most is the political direction. In other words, specifically, are political developments within Euroland moving in the right direction? And my answer is an unequivocal yes. Now, it may seem torturous. It may seem chaotic. Well, it is. But I've talked about that before. 17 countries who didn't even have a plan, rather naively, for these developments are having to come up with something substantial to reassure the markets. And again, I think that they are moving in the correct direction. They are very aware of the seriousness of the situation, and have accelerated the time horizon. Remember, it was only a couple of weeks ago, and people were saying, well, no, we can't vote on that till January, and this kind of nonsense. Well, that's all changed. So my feeling is that while Europe has not lost its capacity to shock, it's gradually diminishing it. And if you feel that sounds a bit Pollyannish, well, just remember, it was, what was it, two, three months ago, we were all terrified about Ireland and the Irish 10-year bond yields. I think they got up to 14 and a quarter, something like that. Well, they're now down below 8. And so they're well off those highs. And I think we peaked on Wednesday with the Italian bond yields, and we'll see them come lower. But equally, should also say, we should not rule out the possibility, almost the inevitability, for setbacks, disagreements, nasty little surprises along the road, but much in the way of a drunken sailor finding his way home or back to ship, they're heading in the right direction. I'll put it that way. Okay, so what does that mean for stock markets? Well, the less we have to worry about Europe, the more we can get on with other considerations, such as corporate profits. Well, they've been pretty darn good. Such as monetary policy. Well, that's very accommodative in the West, and it's getting better in Asia. That's really important. We can get on with worrying about global GDP growth. The U.S. has not slid into recession. Some people said it had never come out of recession. Clearly, that view has been wrong. And that's why the Wall Street leash effect has been really very steady overall. And China's economy has not hit the long forecast by so many people, a hard landing. And it's actually doing quite well. Asia still has inflation problems. Those are serious, but they've mitigated somewhat in China. That's important. China's moving away from its steadily tightening, incrementally tightening monetary policy. India hasn't done that yet, but I think it probably will early in the new year, if not sooner. I certainly hope so. At any rate, Indonesia's moved, Brazil's moved, other countries have moved, Australia's moved on rates. So, again, the monetary policy, if not accommodative, has become less hostile in Asia. I think that's a better way to put it. And that's a positive. And I'm talking about the growth economies here overall. So, you know, it's a long way from Armageddon, and this is an environment that favors equities. And I think, as I've said before, I've said repeatedly, that for Wall Street and many of the other leading markets, that we had some very important lows down in that started in August, but and most, some of them were just, you look at the S&P, they were right exactly at the same level, retested in September, retested in October, we went a tiny bit lower in October. I think it was the NASDAQ that had them all across exactly the same level, the NASDAQ 100. And I said on the 6th or 7th, I know Owen posted it, I was in the States at the time, but emailed the message that felt we'd seen at least a medium term. We'd seen a medium term bottom for stock markets. Well, medium term defined by Fuller Money is anything from a few months to up to a couple of years. Seldom much more than that. So it's important, and I've also said on a number of occasions that I feel that we are or have moved back into. First, I said that we'd ended the cyclical bear, and that we were back into, that meant we were back into, or moving into, a cyclical bull phase. Now, for Wall Street and these Western markets, that's within a long-term valuation contraction cycle. We had 17 years of that from 1966 right on into 1982. If we had 17 years of that, well, it would take us into what, 2000 to 2017. And then add a few more, maybe because for the West at any rate, maybe because of the debt, sovereign debt problems and bank debt problems. But it's basically sideways ranging in that valuation contraction, and the valuations are sufficiently attractive, particularly relative to long-dated government bonds, to make me say without any hesitation whatsoever, as I have been saying, we want to be buying on the dips in here in this environment. And I think the chances of seeing a melt-up are far greater than the chances of seeing another meltdown. And that's a contrarian view. And I've been saying that for a while, and it's certainly been a contrarian view for a while. So we will see. Long-dated government bond prices. I think I said this, I know I said this earlier in the week. I said I'd rather own the Italian bonds than the US 10-year debt. The real buying opportunity was at 7.75%. And we'll see again on that. The bond vigilantes will, try to pick off one bond market after another. That's the way the game goes. Sooner or later, as that rather good Wall Street Journal editorial that I posted earlier in the week, this is going to get to the US. So I think US Treasury bonds are a risky short at this stage of the cycle because Bernanke's still buying them. And the banks are still buying them because they can borrow from the Fed window at practically nothing and leverage it up in the long-term rates, knowing that Bernanke has said that he's unlikely to raise short-term interest rates before mid-2013. So that's an invitation for these banks just to leverage themselves up in long-dated government bonds with borrowed money from the Fed. Now, that's all subsidized, of course, by the savers, the pensioners who aren't getting the yields that they could expect normally. But that's the game that's going on. So I'd say it's a little bit risky shorting the bonds, and don't I know it because I was too soon. I did that too soon. Are we going to have these artificially low yields indefinitely? Well, yes, if we go the Japan route, but all this money printing, plus the better growth rate that we're getting in the USA than Japan was getting at the time, suggests to me that no, that it's going to prove inflationary. Right now, we have deflation in many asset prices in the West, not least houses. We have deflation in wages. You could say a deflation in living standards. We have inflation in commodities and services. But I think that as the economy, the global economy, gradually recovers, and it will, then those inflation pressures will pick up once again. And the one that's really the most dangerous, of course, would be crude oil prices. So we really do need to watch that. I've talked about that this week, back in a backwardation. Here we've got Brent up at 114. Put that up another $20. That's going to be trouble. But that hasn't happened yet. But it is the problem of this decade and the last decade. So we're in a two tough decades in here. Lot of controversy going on about whether the changing the subject here, whether the fracking, shale oil and gas, shale gas fracking, is causing earthquakes or seismic activity. And it probably is. And that's because they pump that wastewater, that salty wastewater, back down into the ground. So, you push too many things down into the ground, whatever it is, and it's going to affect the geography a little bit, isn't it? Is that a game changer? Is that going to undermine the shale activities? Well, I certainly don't think so. But that'll be controversial, just like everything else, offshore drilling or whatever. But I think by and large, we need that energy. David Brooks had a good column on it that I posted earlier in the week. And we're going to see more of it produced around the globe, and thank God for that, or we would be shivering in the dark, or paying one. Those of us who couldn't afford the big energy increases would be shivering in the dark. But what we do know is to take the shale properties, and we've got enough oil to last, enough oil and gas to last probably 100 years, at least. And that's plenty of time to develop all those funky renewables that are the ultimate long-term solution, but are mostly inefficient and inadequate in here with today's technology. But I really do feel, as I've said on a number of occasions, that we get into the next decade. Okay, that's a long way away. It's only 11, 11, 11 here today. We get into the next decade, and I think we will see the start of one of those secular bull markets for equities, and a much better phase generally for global GDP growth. But for that to be true, we need to avoid the big deflation, and we need to see enough countries become energy independent to lower the price of energy in real inflation-adjusted terms, lower it below what it is here today. I think that's going to happen. That's very much a Fuller Money view. Okay, what about these currencies here? Well, the dollar's range bound here right now. I don't think the euro is going to break up, as I've said repeatedly. I don't think, therefore, that the euro is going to collapse. Does the economic background make a case for a weaker euro? Well, sure it does, but the background for the US dollar and all that dollar printing, and a lot of people who hold masses of dollars wanting to get out of some of those dollars, is not an argument for a strong greenback, in my view. Could say the same for sterling here as well. The hard currencies, I think, over time will be, as I've said and as we've maintained for years now, will be take the Asian dollar index. So take the renminbi and Asian currencies generally. But when you get into recessions, or when markets take fright, then they all retreat to the dollar because it's highly liquid and because that's what they've done before. So it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction phase. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't have some currency stability overall, in the sense that we'll get some choppy ranging, but I don't see anything really collapsing in here or soaring. I do think it's unquestionably the yen is too strong for Japanese exporters. The Bank of Japan governor seems to like it that way. And so he's frustrating the efforts of the Japanese Ministry of Finance, and not to mention corporate Japan, to get that yen weaker. I think that's a problem, but it's a Japanese problem, not a global problem. And we need a little bit of luck in terms of crop cycles to keep inflationary pressures at bay. We don't need any wars among energy producers, major energy exporters, I should say. But that's not an unreasonable expectation. So my message here is that things aren't anywhere near as bad as all the fretting and then some would suggest. And on that note, it's been another exciting week, so I wish you a very contented, entertaining weekend, which is what I'm looking forward to. All the best.